What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week on the show, we have three strangers, three points of view, and absolutely zero truth. And we'll talk about it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I am one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, and here with me, Brad Miller.
What's up?
Mike Duranik.
You know, when I think about this movie, I think about the quote that ended our last podcast that you gave. So I'm doing better now that I don't have to ever watch this movie again. Not to bury the lead.
As am I. And for anyone who thought that my cold open was incoherent nonsense that wasn't anything close to a response, that's the tagline of this movie. It's just the numbers are a little different, but that is what they put on a poster to sell this movie. It is Vantage Point. It is our final movie for the month of February. I'm not going to say who picked it because there's no use in kicking someone while they're down.
I picked it. Brad picked it.
Hey, I was willing to just let it slide.
Hey, I didn't pick Hellboy, so I'm good putting my name to this one.
I have a feeling that I enjoyed Hellboy more than you enjoyed Vantage Point.
Yeah, that's anything's possible. All I will say is, as I look at the bottom end of my list, we shouldn't anticipate that the ones that are at the bottom of our list are the ones we picked, but I can say with confidence I did not pick any of the bottom eight on my list. So
there you go. So we are talking Vantage Point, the crime action thriller from 2008. Let me ask the question. I usually ask how you came to experience this movie. Had either of you seen this movie?
Yes, this was my second time seeing it.
Okay, so, Brad, I will ask you, what was your first experience with this film? Mike, then, your question will be the slightly different. Did you know anything about what did you bring into this? So, Brad, we'll start with you. What was your first experience with Vantage Point?
I have a distinct memory of the first time I watched it because yeah, let's just say that it led to some issues with some other movies that were watched around the same time with the same group of people. But it was a youth group movie party at our house that some of the church kids came over to hang out and watch this film. So we all watched it together in our living room, probably a Blockbuster rental, but watched it with a group of high schoolers in my house.
Mike, what did you know about this film?
I knew the name was Vantage Point, and that is it. Now, once I looked it up and started watching it, I had some vague recollections of the marketing for this, but I couldn't have told you the plot. I had no idea really who was in it, and didn't walk into it with much of anything.
I saw this movie in theaters in 2008. It was the last time that I saw it. This was my second viewing of this. I did see it in theaters in 2008 with a group of friends. And I distinctly remember, I don't remember which little twist or nugget or avenue that it went down, but this is one of the first times I remember, I was 13 years old, sitting in a theater and openly saying, like, whatever happens, happens. And I looked at my friend with no regard for who was around me and I said, come the fuck on. Sorry, earmuffs for the kids. But that's my distinct memory of a couple of the parts of this movie. And I had forgotten about it up until I rewatched it. As I was rewatching, I was like, oh, this is that movie that I saw and I said that about. But we'll get into it. The way we start this is the Rotten Tomatoes game. Brad started the month on a hot streak and then didn't want people to think he was cheating, so he just took a nosedive on Billy Madison. So, Mike, you are back in the winner's circle here for the Rotten Tomatoes game. So please, by all means, start with the guess, and I will try to navigate around you. But what do you think is the sitting critic score for this film?
Well, I had a score that I was going to go with, and I'm going to go with a different score. I'm going to explain why. So initially, after we did Black Panther earlier this month, Black Panther, of course, came in at a 96, yes. Right? So I thought, well, this movie isn't even half the movie Black Panther was. So my thought process was I was going to slice that directly in half and go with a 48. However, after last week's abomination by the critics of giving a 41 to Billy Madison, I'm just going to go on principle. And I'm going to say that if this movie scores better than Billy Madison, this is the last podcast I will be doing. So critics, be warned. This is a 40, and it damn sure better not be 1 point higher. I'm kidding. I'll still do the podcast if I'm wrong.
Yeah, now
you've got me scared. That's how strongly I feel about this.
The 46 was easy, but I was going to go 45. Now I don't know what to do. And I'm also scared that it is above Billy Madison. And then in some way I'm scared that this is somehow going to be fresh. That they're just going to have it at a 60 because...
Or even better, this is going to be one of those random, like, well, the fans have it at 57, but the critics have it at 84.
There's no way. I'm going to go with sensibilities. Like, I know that this movie made no money. I know that nobody talked about it after it came out. I know that, like, the gimmick just didn't hit. So you said 40,
right? Yes, 100 Billy Madison.
Okay, I'll say 39. Hoping against hope that people knew what this was when they saw it.
So before Brad reads this, I do just want to point out, if we are even in the ballpark of right, I think that this is unquestionably the worst month we've had, in spite of the fact that we started off with a 96,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because it's got to be.
The crazies were in the low 70s.
Yeah.
And then we're both saying that this is solidly rotten, and Billy Madison obviously was.
Yeah.
Brad, who is right?
This will go on the Mount Rushmore of suck-ass films that we've done, according to Rotten Tomatoes.
Sweet!
And this is a 34%, and Mike can remain on the podcast.
I've never been happier to lose this game.
It says, Vantage Point has an interesting premise that is completely undermined by fractured storytelling and wooden performances.
It did. Spoiler alert, that critic synopsis is totally right.
Yeah, that's 100%. So, I mean, take it back. And of course, the next question I always ask is Rotten Tomatoes correct? Go with the notion, if I tell you, like, okay, there's this movie coming out where there's, you know, our president's getting assassinated, whatever it is, whatever the thing is that'll happen, we're going to take the time to see it from however many different perspectives. And that is how we're going to piece together the mystery of what this movie will be. Because people have different vantage points, obviously. Like, and that's how we're going to put it together. And in the process of doing that, we're going to put together multiple Academy Award nominated and winning. William Hurt has one. I don't know if Scorny Weaver does, but I'm sure she's been nominated. Nominated, winning, very highly acclaimed people. Between the two of them, Dennis Quaid, Zoe Saldana's even in this thing. Not that anybody knew who she was in 2008. But she's in it. Matthew Fox was at the peak of his powers then because of Lost. Like, a lot of famous people put together. Almost like the cast of Knives Out, just in 2008. I'm expecting an 80% movie. And I don't know if it's the director. I don't know if it's the fact that Dennis Quaid was a little past his prime to be leading a movie the way that this hit. Whatever, Forest Whitaker's in this too. It was a swing and a miss, and I'm going to say Rotten Tomatoes is correct. Like, this is, we talk about judging things on the curve of what they're going up against. I wasn't thrilled. The action wasn't that great to me, and they took a big swing with the idea and didn't land it, in my opinion. So I'm going to say one of the few times I say Rotten Tomatoes is correct, and it's on the very down end.
I mean, no, I don't think that they were correct. I don't think it's as bad as a 34. I think it fell flat in several areas, but I think it was honestly, like, if I'm going to say something nice about it was just ahead of its time, because when I watched this in 2008, I had a very fond memory of this film. Maybe it was just the group of people I watched it with, maybe it was the experience, but, like, I was excited when I saw this as an option to watch, because I thought, oh, hey, there was that movie I saw, you know, 14, 15 years ago, and was excited to see it. Now, did I enjoy it this time? No. I think it was it's a bad movie. But I think what makes it bad now is what we've seen in the last 15 years that have done this premise better. Because 15 years ago, we didn't know what phones and stuff could do today. We didn't know what cameras and stuff could do today, and satellites and all this stuff, that where we are now. So looking at it now, it's like, okay, this is ridiculous. There's no way they could have pulled this off with the technology they had. But if you make this movie today and, you know, act it a little bit better, I don't know that it falls as flat as it does. I think that part of it is they just didn't know what they had and kind of played it close to the vest rather than just, like, you know, going for it. So I think, yes, it fell flat. I think it was... I think the cast actually hurt it. I think if you would have taken some of these actors out and had some lesser named people that maybe just weren't getting a paycheck, you know, they probably would have given some better performances. But I think it was a good effort that fell flat. And I think that had you told me this came in the mid 50s to low 60s, I think I would say that that's a fair number. But I think to call it that bad, there's some really, really sucky films out there that should score in this number range, and I think it's unfair to put this with them. But it fell flat. It was boring. It, you know, wasn't impressed, but at the same time, it's similar to what we just talked about with Billy Madison. You know, when I watched it 15 years ago, this to me was enjoyable. This time was not. But I think it's just because we know more now than what we did then.
I think that ultimately, Brad, what you said there that I agree with, and it's what the critics said, right? They had something here. There is the plot somewhere in here of a good movie. Mm-hmm. There is an idea of an intriguing whodunit, thriller, mystery with some hooks in it that, you know, you know that it's going to hook. You know you're not going to be able to see the end, but you're still surprised when it comes there. And I do agree with you. I think that they overall got hurt, right? So Sigourney Weaver's character, you cast somebody as big as Sigourney Weaver in that role, and that character is relatively inconsequential in the grand scheme of the movie. So I feel like that draws away from it. Dennis Quaid, neither here nor there on Dennis Quaid. He's fine. Not a great performance. I love what you said, and it's so right about, you know, Matthew Fox, and we'll go through people more, I'm sure, but this was peak Matthew Fox, right? 2008, this is peak Lost as a cultural phenomenon, and making decisions like this is probably why Matthew Fox's career didn't go much of anywhere after Lost. And so I do look at it, the cast did not add up to even a sum equal its parts. And what you would hope with an ensemble cast like this is that you're taking it and it's becoming greater than its parts. And then again, the plot line itself was incoherent. For me to be able to tell you all of the details that they were trying to pull together to make this movie something great, I would have had to have given a lot more effort than it deserved. And so that's where, what was it, where were the critics at? Yeah, this is not the worst movie in my opinion that we've watched, but I had it ranked at number 100 out of the 108 that we've ranked, so it's pretty far down there because of those reasons.
Well, before you jump onto that, like, we also, I don't even know that we mentioned Forrest Whitaker, who's arguably the best actor in this movie.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. You know, didn't need him for that role either.
Yeah.
But also someone else that was younger and hungrier that could have put in that performance. Like, I think we judge it more harshly because he's in it than if he wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I was going to head. Like, at this point in Forrest Whitaker's career, you do not need him to be the bumbling tourist with a camera. Right? Like, that's not who he is in 2008.
And this, because he was such a big actor, when I watched it this time, I was trying to, because I kind of forgot how it went, but I thought somehow he was involved in the assassination, because why else would you have him in it if he's just there?
Is this movie better if they switch Matthew Fox and Dennis Quaid's roles?
That'd be a step in the right direction.
Do you see the hook coming less if it's Dennis Quaid who ends up being involved in it?
That'd be a step in the right direction, I think, because I forgot a ton of details of this movie, and then as soon as it's right near the beginning where he's like, thanks for getting me back out here, he's like, don't thank me yet, or like, really? Like, come on. Why didn't you just have him slowly turn to the camera and wink as he said it? Like, it just, I think you made a really good point that I agree with. Like, the idea of this movie was such a big swing that it feels like as they were making it, there was a bunch of times where they were like, whoa, hold on, let's back off. hold on, let's back off. Because, like, that's the other thing that what really ends up just, like, tanking this score for me. Like, I don't care if something's confusing. I can follow almost anything. And if I can't, I can pause it and think, like, it was confusing for all the wrong reasons. Like, it's supposed to be disorienting because we're seeing the different vantages. That's fine. But this is a body double that got shot, and then this guy's over here, and then this guy was dead when you saw it this way, but he's actually not dead because of this way. And, like, it's not vantage points giving you pieces of the puzzle. Each vantage point is changing what puzzle you're putting together.
Well, and you just said something that illustrates the point that I was trying to make better. I didn't care enough to want to stop and put the pieces together. They didn't engage me. And so that to me is uninspired acting mixed with really choppy writing.
I think there was a show that came out. I don't know if you guys have ever even heard of it, let alone seen it, but it was The Affair. It's called The Affair. It's on Showtime. Very different set of circumstances, obviously, than the content material, but that show, every episode would be cut up into, let's say, four scenes. And it'd be a black screen with white lettering, and it would say Jonathan. And so you're seeing this next 20 minutes as if Jonathan is telling you the story. And then the screen would go black, and it would say Sarah. Now you're seeing probably that same exact 20 minutes again, or maybe a little bit different, but some intersection, but Sarah's the one telling you the story. And it's obviously a very, very different outcome in a set of circumstances because of who's telling it, because this person says that the affair happened because you made the first move, not because I made. And that, for a couple seasons, was that show fell apart. But the initial premise was very interesting because, one, you can understand how people telling a story, of course, you're going to tell the story to make you look better. And you're trying to kind of cut through the weeds of what's the most important piece of information and what actually happened. That's engaging. This, and again, I think if they would have committed to what they were doing, it would have been different. But they ended up getting to a point where it wasn't the same story being told from different people. It was eight different stories being told by eight different people. And that's what ended up just... I was just over it halfway through the movie.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty clear that they were worried that they were getting too far-fetched with the technology. And for 2008, that's probably fairly accurate.
Yeah.
For 2023... to look back, you're thinking, like, why didn't they push that further? Because now we know what's possible with that technology. So I think that because of the casting and because of the timing of when we watch this, I think that that number gets lowered. But I, for one, can say, and maybe I just wasn't as knowledgeable or on movies as I back then as I am now, but, like, I remember really enjoying this. As a matter of fact, when I told my family that I was going to watch this, like, they were excited to see this with me because my wife remembered it fondly too. And when I ended up watching it without her. And when I told her, I was like, hey, you just saved a couple hours of your life by not watching that again. She looked legitimately let down because she was like, oh, that's a bummer. I remember liking that movie. So, you know, obviously young Ethan, when he saw it, when it came out, didn't enjoy it, but, you know, it's one of those that I think, depending on when and where you watch it, it's going to land differently.
What boundaries do you feel like they held back on? Because you both have mentioned that, where, like, they held back, they didn't push it, and, like, I guess I'm curious about that.
I think something like Dennis Quaid's character being the bad guy instead, I think you could have taken a step like that, and then just things where they put in that line of, like, don't thank me yet, like, I think they got to a point where, you know, how many different mysteries are in this movie, right? If there's the body double, which one of them got shot, which one of the bad guys is alive and dead, those guys are related. Like, they started getting to so many points where really the big twist should have been that one of the Secret Service men was actually a bad guy. But you get to a point where you're putting in so many twists and turns in the movie where that almost felt like an afterthought by the end of the movie. Like, I didn't feel... I probably should have felt like, it really sucks, man. Like, Dennis Quaid just got screwed over by this guy that he clearly sees as a friend. But by the time we get down to that, I've gone through so many dips, dives, ducks, dodges, and dives, you know, that it doesn't mean anything anymore. So, and I think that they had too many ideas on the board, and this is where it's okay to trim back some things and just focus on two twists You don't have to put in eight just because the movie is from eight different perspectives, right? Like, you can have just a couple things that you put a lot of effort into, not a bunch of things that you kind of just a little bit touch on.
I think for me it was how easy it was for them to manage the whole environment with these flip phones while watching and being a part of the crowd and watching this guy's doing this stuff with his BlackBerry or whatever. And I guess looking at that, I'm thinking like, okay, that's not possible the way he's doing this. And they, what they held back on was diving into that technology and showing how he could actually manipulate this entire scene by standing there in the crowd. Like, I feel like now if you see someone pull out an iPad or something and they start doing that, you automatically are like, okay, I get that. I understand what they're doing. With this, they've got these old flip phones that they're doing this stuff with, and he's calling at a certain time, manipulating his voice and doing all these things, and he's pushing this button to make this gun fire, and like, how'd they get the gun? Like, they just didn't go into the planning of it enough to kind of show it, I guess the way they did it, it seemed more far-fetched than if they had really gotten down into it and gotten down to the nitty-gritty of what they were doing. I think it would have made me care more. They spent too much time focusing on so many different areas instead of really focusing on the important stuff in each one. It just felt like they were worried that it was going to seem like it was too far-fetched as way it seemed to me, but yeah, that's where I kind of felt like they held back a little bit.
So with all that then, what was your guys' favorite scene from Vantage Point? And if you want, I can go first if you'd like. For me, it's like what we've talked about, the running theme of this has been, there's a great premise here, it could have been good, they didn't execute it well. So my favorite scene of the movie is the first time you see the assassination attempt. I think they did do a really good job of building up the tension. I think it's like the curtain is fluttering or whatever like that, and he looks up, and then like how that all breaks down, I think was a very good setup for this movie, and I was still engaged at that point on the rewatch. I was like, maybe I was wrong, maybe, you know, but then it kind of falls apart for me. But up to that point, that's the beginning of what this could have been, and it kind of falls off from there. But that was my favorite scene, was that initial assassination attempt the first time. I thought they did a really good job with that.
Yeah, I'll just echo that. I do think that was the highlight of the movie. I think it was the peak of the movie. Not a whole lot to add. I think that before the movie really gets going is when it's at its peak.
I think for me it was when they revealed that the president hadn't really gotten shot, and you see they're showing the switcheroo and the conversation between them. It just kind of makes you wonder, and this is again, I think, where they kind of hold back on the far-fetched stuff. Like how realistic is that? You know, was there a second Barack Obama somewhere that we just, you know, like, it just makes you think, like, how much of this stuff goes on that we don't even know about? And, you know, to just dip your toe in the water with that and not really kind of flush that out was an interesting choice to me. But that scene there where they kind of pulled back that curtain of like, okay, this is the inner workings of the government and how we're going to keep our leader safe, is in even thinking to the point of like, he sent this guy up here that looks like him, knowing that there's a good chance he might get shot there today, you know. And like, just kind of, it got me thinking about, you know, just the what that would really mean if that were truly reality. So, yeah, that was my favorite scene.
Who did it better? William Hurt as the body double playing both roles, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Natalie Portman and Keira Knightley in The Phantom Menace?
Natalie Portman and Keira Knightley. Which I didn't think there's going to be many times I found a movie more enjoyable, less enjoyable than The Phantom Menace, but we did.
The real answer is from The Prestige. They did the best body double there.
That was great. Yes. That's great how they do that up. Yes.
Yes.
All right, so favorite line then, gentlemen. Anything?
Well, the political scientist in me did appreciate this line. when you think foreign policy. So I'll just give the shout out to the beauty of American arrogance they can't imagine a world where they're not a step ahead.
Yep. I thought that was a great bad guy line. Of anything, I was like, mm-hmm. that in an awesome 90s action movie, that Gary Oldman should have said that in Air Force One, right? That was, if we could make Air Force One better, he would have said that. That was what I thought. So that was mine as well.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add that's better than that. So,
all right. Well, then that we'll finish up our conversation.
One thought before you end this. As crappy as you guys say that movie was, as far as movie discussions go, sometimes I think it's okay that we go that route because we had a pretty good discussion on that. And
I'm always open to it. Yeah. It
lends itself to some good talk. So we can't always have those top 10 bangers.
One of the hardest I've ever laughed is when we did our Bad Boys episode. I mean, we'll bring...
The hardest I laughed is when we did The Hangover.
Well, yeah.
I was about to pee my pants. I was laughing so hard. But...
There is always that. But that will wrap up our conversation of Vantage Point and wrap up our month of February. So next week, we'll be kicking off the month of March, and I think I alluded to it a couple times this month, so we might as well just knock it off. We're going to open up the month of March with Outbreak, a movie, I think in the 90s, probably had to be in the 90s, mm-hmm. gained a lot of popularity because Netflix, true to form, got the rights to that and put it back up right when COVID hit. So these last couple of years, that movie has definitely come back into the cultural zeitgeist. So we're going to do that to start the month of March, and... Other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.